Hello, everyone, and welcome to Our Stories, lively and direct from the production studios at community radio station KHMB, 100.9 FM and 1710 AM. This podcast is a collection of news stories from CoastsideNews.com, publishers of the Half Moon Bay Review and the Pacifica Tribune. This podcast is a collaboration between the nonprofit Coastal Literary Arts Movement, Coastside News, and KHMB Radio. I'm David Gorn. Thank you for joining us on Our Stories. We are very excited this week because we have hit double digits. This is podcast number 10, if you can believe it. The weeks just fly by. The idea of Our Stories is to pick out the top stories of the week to share with you. Sometimes that's important hard news on the coast side, like the attempt to repave Highway 1 and what might get in the way of that. Sometimes we get a little esoteric, like getting into the legal fight over who pays for the sewers on the coast side. And sometimes it's news that's a little lighter, like the retirement of teacher Tom Cox. We're trying to mix it up a little so people know about the big stuff and they get a little bit of the fun stuff too. And I have to ask you, what's more fun than foghorns? With me in studio is Ashton Hackey. He's a reporter for Coastside News, and he doesn't love foghorns. And he doesn't hate foghorns, but he does love the fighting over the foghorns because that makes a really good story. So, Ashton, I want to talk about this foghorn for a second.
Yeah. So, I've been hearing about the foghorn.
Well, have you been hearing about the foghorn?
I've been hearing about the lack of foghorn forever.
Yeah.
I know it's been front and center on the coastside recently, so tell me about that.
A couple months ago, I received a petition that was going around saying that people miss the foghorn, and it's a way of coastal life, and people want it back, and a major part of their life, and the reason why they moved there, has been ripped away from them. And this petition, actually, at the time, had 1,300 signatures. At the time of recording, we're now at 1,500 signatures, and it's still climbing.
Right. I understand, first of all, that it's part of our identity.
Sure.
Like, it's Half Moon Bay, you hear the foghorn, right?
Yeah.
I get that. But at the same time, if you actually don't need a foghorn, are they asking to have someone blow a foghorn that doesn't do anything?
Well, you ask the Harbor District and other mariners, there are other ways to navigate without the foghorn, but, you know, there are still a group of people who say the foghorn is necessary in case of a backup situation. You always want to be prepared when you're on the open seas. So that's one group, but there's definitely this, you know, on land group that is very concerned about it, for sure.
So what does the foghorn do?
So that's a great question. When boats are coming in or going across our shores, the foghorn provided an audible way to detect if you were getting closer to land.
So it's a warning.
It's a warning.
So it's saying, you can't see us, but we're here.
Yes.
Okay. So we are now in 2025.
Yeah.
And we don't really need the foghorn anymore. I mean, the boats don't navigate by sight or sound so much anymore, right?
Well, that's an opinion held, and there's a group who has a very strong opinion against that narrative at the same time as well, yes.
So there is some question about whether it's needed or not. I guess the other question I have is, how much does it cost to run a foghorn?
Well, I can tell you how much it costs to replace the entire thing recently.
Tell me.
So the Coast Guard actually replaced the foghorn in November of 2022. This is the foghorn that had been running since 1987. And the agency said it spent over $393,000 to install the new signal.
Okay. So they installed a new one three years ago.
Yes.
So why not use it? That doesn't seem to make sense. Like, you spent all this money, almost $400,000 to, like, get a foghorn, and now you're not going to use it 4 years later?
It's definitely perplexing. Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that it may not be needed. Okay, I get that. It might, like, honestly, it's probably not needed. but isn't it automated? Isn't it something that when the fog comes in, it starts going? It's not like you have to hire somebody to press a button.
You know, maybe it's not necessary on seas, and, you know, people have different opinions on that. All I can tell you is that there is, you know, over 1,500 people now who have the opinion that it should be happening.
We like our foghorn.
Yes.
So, I just have to ask, is there anybody who has complained about the foghorn?
Yes.
Oh, there is.
So this is actually kind of how we get into this story here. So when I first saw the petition, like any good journalist, the very first thing I do is I take a keyword and I search our archives. I would encourage anyone to search the Half Moon Bay archives. There's some really interesting stuff in there.
And so you search foghorn.
I search the word foghorn. I hit click, and this forgotten history almost feels like appeared. So that was one of the, I guess, my main things I really wanted to highlight in this piece is what exactly happened. And there was a person in 1998 who said, hey, I live in El Granada, and I don't like the foghorn.
Okay, so 1998.
Yeah.
So 1998, we have somebody who's kind of annoyed.
Yes, he actually moved from Menlo Park to El Granada, and after 2 weeks of living there, said, I think I made a mistake. I can't sleep at night.
Well, that's kind of his problem, right?
Well, he tried to get around it. He said he slept with earplugs in at night, but was concerned that he wouldn't be able to hear his kids in distress in the middle of the night.
Okay, so one guy in 1998, and then...
So in 1998, this person goes to the nearby hotels in the harbor and says, have you ever received complaints about the foghorn from guests? And he was able to collect some complaints.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And then they took that to the Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard says, recognizing a possible conflict and potentially negative impact on local hotels, the Coast Guard agreed to adjust the volume so that it was the same volume going out to sea, but towards the land it was muted.
Okay. So they just made it a little quieter.
Their office got flooded with letters to the editor. People were calling. People were super upset. There was this organization called Save Our Bay. They collected over 2,500 signatures. They sent that to Representative Anna Eshoo's office. And eventually, there was so much noise on land that the Coast Guard decided, okay, fine. We're going to have a town hall in Half Moon Bay and talk about it.
Okay, so it may not actually be turned off, is I think what you're saying. We don't know for sure.
We don't know
because the Coast Guard's not responding.
Yes.
But it might just be so quiet that you can't hear it now on land.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And actually, this is important. We're not done here. In this Coast Guard dilemma, they sat down with the Coast Guard, and the people were actually able to convince the Coast Guard to remove the mute.
Okay.
So in 1998, they were able to fully restore the foghorn to its original sound.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm not really sure what caused Coast Guard to remute recently.
Let me tell you.
Okay.
So, in 2020, another complaint about the foghorn's volume was made to the Coast Guard, and as a result, the Coast Guard sent out flyers all across the coastside and said, hey, if you have any concerns, we would love to hear from you.
Do they want to turn it off? That's crazy.
Yeah, not exactly sure. They never responded to comment, so we won't necessarily know what's going on in that office. So between 2020 to 2022, they heard complaints, and they also said that the majority of comments they got were people in support of the foghorn.
Okay. So everybody loves the foghorn.
Yeah.
It is muted at the moment, and they're trying to unmute it, and we haven't really heard from the Coast Guard. Because if they unmute it and we start having the sound again, they're going to end up eventually getting complaints about the sound.
Well, exactly. So in 2021, they remuted the foghorn. So now we are back here with a petition to unmute the foghorn again. So 1998, we muted it and unmuted it in the same year. 2020 to 2022, we remuted it. And now in 2025, we're trying to unmute it again.
Okay. Seems pretty clear that it's not really needed. There's some argument about that. I get that. But it's pretty much not needed. But they also got a brand new foghorn 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. If they decide to keep it muted, there will be outrage. And if they decide to unmute it, there will be outrage. That's pretty much the only thing we know.
All we know is that there's about 1,500 people who are very upset about it, and we don't know how many people are upset about the noise on the other end. That's what we know about so far.
I've actually never really heard of anyone petitioning for more noise.
This, according to them, is a way of coastside life.
So. Well, but it is.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Ashton.
Yeah.
That was really fun and interesting. Yeah. That brings us to our second story. Now, when you think of the Coastside, yes, that foghorn sound comes to mind. But really what the Coastside is known for these days is surfing in general, and Mavericks in particular. With us to kick it around a little is Emma Spaeth, publisher of Coastside News, who has promised me to use her best Valley Girl accent to do this story. Hi, Emma. Tell me why we're here.
So obviously everyone around here knows about Mavericks, but even when I travel to other states or other countries and I say I'm from Half Moon Bay, the number of people who have heard of this little town because of Mavericks is kind of shocking.
Oh, you are from the Maverick City?
Exactly. Well, there's a new book about Mavericks, and I think it's pretty cool.
So I saw the story you wrote. It was interesting to me that it wasn't just the story of a Maverick surfer. It was a lot more than that.
Yeah. So it's written by a guy named Frank Curardi, who has photographed Mavericks and his surfers for almost 3 decades.
Oh, so it's mostly photographs? So it's like a really cool coffee table book?
Not exactly. It's definitely beautiful. The photos are amazing. But there are also so many stories in there that are fascinating. I mean, think about it. The waves of Mavericks are so huge. The surfers there are in genuine danger. And part of what this book is about is also the rescue efforts, which Frank jump-started.
So I have to tell you, when I first heard about this book, I did what what every good journalist does. I Googled Frank Curardi, and you know what came up for me, first hit?
No idea.
It was an article about the book and Mavericks, and it's in Surfer Magazine, and the guy who wrote it was August Howell.
August.
As you know very well, August Howell was a longtime reporter here for Coastside News and the Half Moon Bay Review, and it turns out he lives in Santa Cruz and is working full-time as a reporter for Surfer Magazine. So I went down there to catch up with him. And we sat on his front porch with half a dozen broken surfboards adorning his garden. And he had a lot to say about Frank Curardi and the new book.
So what I love about 28 Years at Sea is that it really pairs Frank's two skill sets really well, photography and his big wave rescue experience. In almost every page, there's stunning photos plus written accounts of his experiences from almost 3 decades at one of the craziest waves in the world.
So, you know, one of the things that I really liked about this book is that, like, when I first saw it, I thought, well, it's a surfer's book, right? I'm going to read about a surfer. But it's all about Mavericks. It ends up being all about Mavericks.
Yeah. I think it's a good mix. I mean, you do definitely learn about him. But yeah, the other half of it is such a, like, tribute to Mavericks and its power and its history. That's another thing I really appreciate about this book. I mean, it's in the title. It's 28 years worth of experience. It's a huge breadth of history, really.
Well, so that actually leads me to my next question, which is, how old are you?
I'm 28. 28 years old.
Because I know you grew up on the coast. And so the year you were born is the year he started.
I always grew up with like a healthy fear of Mavericks. I was like very wary of it.
Well, I guess Mavericks is dangerous. Mavericks is really dangerous. And he is the only floating mobile thing out there.
The Mavericks water safety, water rescue crew, he has helped develop over, you know, a number of years. They do trainings with the, you know, the Pillar Point Harbor Patrol, U.S. Coast Guard. They all have radios. You know, they're all communicating. So yeah, it's pretty full on. Yeah,
well, it also occurred to me that it's so dangerous at Mavericks. If you're out there with a camera intent on focusing on a surfer on a wave, you're not really looking around you much.
Yeah, there are some stories where he has, you know, lost some skis and taken some poundings for sure.
One of the things that is in this book is his rescues.
One in particular that stands out is this one that happened, it was like late February 2012, and this guy, Shane Dorian, who's hands down one of the best big wave surfers of all time, had a bad wipeout, and Frank, of course, happened to be there. And he pulled up and saw Shane take this wipeout. And it was, you know, horrific, like multiple wave hold down, meaning he's underwater as multiple waves pass through, which is kind of like the worst case scenario for any big wave surfer. Shane obviously trained for that. This is like, you know, this is his zone. But it really like shook him to his core. Like it was a near-death experience. You know, easily could have died. Frank, of course, was on the scene first and grabbed him and pulled him up out of the water. Yeah, Shane was so shook up by that experience that he realized, I got a family, you know, I can't be like putting my life at risk all the time like this. So it led him to create what's called like an inflation vest. So a vest surfers would wear under their wetsuit with multiple CO2 cartridges that you could pull when you're underwater. The air would inflate in the suit and bring you up to the surface. And so it sounds like a radical idea, but it's commonplace in most big wave zones around the world now, Mavericks included.
I did not know that. That is really cool.
Yeah.
The other thing that I want to talk about is for this book, there was a party at OPL, Old Princeton Landing, and a lot of people were there, including you. So tell me.
Yeah, it was full on. I mean, OPL has a long history of parties related to Mavericks and surfing, and I think it was one for the books. It was cool. I did notice at one point, you know, they had a little, I wouldn't call it a panel. It was more of a group of notable surfers and photographers on stage. So of course you had Jeff Clark, Richard Schmidt, who was a Santa Cruz underground legend, surfed it for many years. You had Alois Labir, Peter Mill, Flea, Sean Dollar, former big wave world record holder. But it was cool to see all that history in one place.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's kind of what you get with the book, which is all that history in one place.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, there's so much. Right when Mavericks burst onto the scene, he was like right there to document it all.
So you're a surfer. I've seen the broken surfboards out in front of your house. So you going out there?
The Mavericks? No. I'll keep a healthy distance and let the guys do their thing.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. But I love watching.
Well, thank you. That was really fun.
Yeah, thank you. This was cool.
And that will do it for podcast number 10. Thanks for joining us. I would like to thank a few people for their help with this podcast. First of all, big thanks to Surfer Magazine for lending us August Howell. And of course, thanks to August Howell for rejoining us at Coastside News, even if it was just for a few minutes. Thanks to reporter Ashton Hackey, along with editor Peter Tukofsky and publisher Emma Spaeth, all from Coastside News. Thanks to the Coastside Chamber for use of their excellent podcast room. Thanks also to KHMB Radio, station manager Jim Henderson, and engineer Jay Michaels. And thanks to the nonprofit Coastal Literary Arts Movement for supporting us. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. I'm David Gorn. And we're excited to do this again in 2 weeks. Wednesday at 6 p.m. on KHMB Radio and through Spotify and other apps. Adios.